Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm very pleased to be joined this afternoon by something of a celebrity in these parts, Michael Gray, the host of Open Air with Sherry Humor.
Thank you, Jen.
Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thanks for being with us.
So my pleasure.
The idea to have you on came from, so often we have people call into the show and express their gratitude for the show and for the many, many years of archives and just the opportunity to participate in this way. And often I hear you say what a great honor it is for you and how much of an impact it's had on your practice to steward this opportunity for so many years. So I thought it would be fun to get a chance to be on and just talk about that, talk about what that's been like for you, the evolution of your own practice and the impact you've seen on your practice of being the steward of the really foundational parts of our practice.
Yes. Thank you, Jen. You know, as I was thinking about this today, I decided to look up the definition of stewardship.
Ah, very good.
And what it is the careful and responsible management of something entrusted to one's care.
Mm, lovely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And what I see in that is that, you know, in a way, practice is entrusted to the care of all of us.
Yes.
We're all responsible for that.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, as I say that, it reminds me of talking about the privileged environment. And the privileged environment is not, I think, at first, it felt like it was imposed externally on me when I go on retreat or when I go on the monastery. Mm-hmm. And then I realized over time that I'm actually creating that. I'm supporting that. I'm maintaining that.
Yep. That's exactly right. You, each of us is a steward of the privileged environment.
Yes. Yeah. And so each of us is a steward of practice in our own way, and it's a precious jewel, and it needs a lot of care and attention and love and all of that. And I feel really lucky that this is the part that I play in that jewel for our practice.
Really beautifully put, that each of us has a role to play, truly, that, you know, whether you're hosting the show Open Air, which is a pretty visible role, or you're at home practicing and you've never been on retreat with us, that in some way each of us is really carrying, stewarding our part in practice.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And one particular benefit for me in this role is that, you know, once I've made this commitment, I'm required to show up.
Yeah, that's so huge, isn't it?
It is. And it's expected of me, and you expect it, and Sherry expects it, and everybody in the Sangha expects it. And that's a really good thing, actually.
So good. Yeah. Say more about that. Because, you know, that could seem like what conditioning wants to do with that is like, oh, geez, you know, I have to, it's all up to me. But that's not the case at all, is it, when we accept it as the practice that it is?
Yes, and what comes up as you say that is the value of commitment, which I suspect is why people make commitments in marriage or relationships or jobs or whatever, because it helps us to get through those times when I don't feel like it, I don't think I can do it today, I'm not up to it, I don't want to.
Yep. Yeah, so there you are. It's 4:30, right? And you're at the end of a long day of work, just like everybody else, right? You're, whatever's going on, you're hungry, you're tired, you're grumpy, you're identified, or whatever it is, I imagine any number of times, if it hadn't been a Tuesday, there would have been sort of the space, if you will, for conditioning to have its way with you. But at 4:30 on a Tuesday, you're required, in a sense, to disidentify, to show up. And then what we find out is, oh, my gosh, that's what I want. You know, that's what serves me so perfectly, so beautifully.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you stated it perfectly. Exactly, it's exactly what I was going to say. And it's so great to have that commitment. And, you know, over 12, 13 years, I've basically proved to myself that whatever's going on with me, identification or whatever, that I can drop it for the show.
Yeah, that's another huge one. That if we prove it to ourselves.
Yep.
We prove it to ourselves because you have to, and so you do.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Because how many other times are there where, you know, the stakes aren't quite so high, it's not such a public position, there's not so many people, so much riding on it, so many people counting on it, and there can be that sense of like, well, I can't pull myself out of this. I just can't, you know. But of course we can. If we have to, then we can. And so if we can in the situations where we have to, then we can all the time.
Yes, exactly so. And as we're talking about this, I remember that it's the same thing for each of us who does an RLB call, reflective listening brain
yeah,
call.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It's 2 o'clock on Thursday, and it's time for the call, and it's really important to show up for someone else, quote someone else.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I do.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah.
Yeah, and you make a really good point with that, in the sense of, you know, I'm supposedly showing up for you and the Sangha, and, you know, I'm showing up for myself, and I'm the first beneficiary of that.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. Yep, the primary beneficiary. As we often say, especially when we're talking about facilitation in practice, well, that's great if other people benefit. But being really clear that for each of us, the practice that we're participating in is for this person primarily. And of course, that automatically, that kind of sincere, authentic practice has a tremendous ripple effect, but it's always for the person who's doing it. That's the primary beneficiary.
Yes, yes, exactly. And as you know, conditioning is always trying to get us to quit practice or loosen our commitments or... and so I find it particularly helpful to have a commitment to practice, you know, something that
yes.
the monastery expects of me or the guide
yep.
or, you know, it's a kind of a regular commitment. It's a time-sensitive thing. And mm-hmm. it really, you know, forces me to stay current with practice. And
yep.
if I'm going to leave practice, it's got to be a conscious or unconscious decision in some way, but I got to communicate about it and make it public. So that's why it's great
yeah.
to have that full commitment.
Yeah, yeah, it's the marriage analogy you were making a few minutes ago, isn't it? So there, I'm in a relationship. Yeah, I really love this person. You know, I mean, we don't need to get married. And, you know, I'm not making any literal commentary on whether someone should get married or not. I'm not a good candidate for that. But just that sense of when you make a public statement like that, you know, you get married, or you're on the air. You know, you're the voice. You're the guy pushing the buttons everywhere for the radio show. So if conditioning was going to try to pull you out of practice, as you say, there'd be a lot of steps that you'd have to walk through, and the chances that you'd wake up at some point through one of those steps is really high.
Yeah.
So it's almost like we build support structures in for ourselves, because we know, right? We know we get identified. We know conditioning is going to want to talk us into all kinds of stuff. So it's like I just had this image of, you know, we put literally our stumbling blocks in our own way, or in conditioning's way, we could say. So if we start headed down that path that we know conditioning is going to try to put us on, we're going to start falling. And hopefully that's going to wake us up and go, wait, do I really want to do that?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. You know, one of
the
other things.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, just one more thing. I picked my career and I picked my jobs to accommodate open air.
Wow.
It's important. And I love it. And, you know, I arranged my life to make it happen.
Mm. Well, that's inspiring. I bet you there are a lot of people in the Sangha who are in that same place, who have had their lives so transformed by practice that they truly do that, build their lives so that practice is where everything comes from. What an extraordinary way to live.
Wow.
You know, the last thing that occurs to me, Michael, and then you guys got to get started with the show, but just that idea that came through Michael however many years ago that was now to, hey, let's look into starting a radio show. And the willingness to step forward, to say that idea, to start taking the steps to do it, what a gift. You know, it's the thing Ashwini always says of, it takes all of us. You know, and that idea came through this particular form, and there was the willingness to communicate that and to start taking the steps to make it happen and to carry it through all of these years.
That's a great thing. That's a great thing. You know, what that reminds me of is, it was either Sherry or Ashwini who said that the intelligence that animates needs all of us to express itself.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so this idea came through me, and, you know, some other IRLB came through somebody else, and
exactly.
Another idea. Exactly. And it's such a beautiful thing to have all of those pieces to support us.
It really is. It really, really is. Yep. Yeah. Mm. So much, much gratitude for your willingness over the years. And I know for myself, because I have the great honor of participating in a number of things too, that the more you give, the more you get.
That's
so
true.
I know what a, yeah, kind of feels like you keep digging yourself deeper into debt, doesn't it? With the more you step up and offer to practice, the deeper into debt you get.
That's true. It's a good hole to dig myself into.
It's a good hole to dig yourself into. Yeah, maybe that's the ultimate stumbling block, right? You dig yourself into a practice hole that conditioning can never get you out of.
Yeah, that is good.
Great. Well, thank you, Michael. Thanks for being with us this afternoon.
My pleasure.
And have a great, great show with Sherry.
Okay. Thank you, Jen. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. That was fun.
Yeah,
fun to hear that.
Yeah.
And fun and inspiring. I was thinking about it because, of course, I knew you were going to be interviewed this evening. I don't know why I say of course often. I don't know. It's a complete surprise to me, and it's always a thrill. But today I did know that you were going to be interviewed. And I thought, you know, I don't think that guy has missed more than 3 shows in the 12 years or 11 years or whatever it is that he's been doing this. You know, and now I know why, because you've arranged your life so that you're always available. It's really quite extraordinary. I mean, it's really extraordinary because I can remember maybe a time when you were, you know, sounded totally croaky because you were sick, but you know, you're still there. So it you are an inspiration for us, and much, much, much appreciated.
Thank you. And as you like to say, it's a lot of fun. So, you know, there's an intrinsic motivation not to miss them.
Yes, that's true. That really is true. I'll tell you a little thing that I was ranting and raving about today because, you know, I really do want people to end suffering. I really want people to get it, that what the Buddha was teaching was that we can end suffering so that we can live happy, fulfilled lives. That suffering doesn't have anything to do with anything other than egocentric, karmic, conditioning, self-hate. That's it. And so, you know, I really, really want people to get that so that they can have the life that's available to them. So what I was looking at today is the number of people who will choose their karma even though their karma makes them unhappy, they will choose it time and time and time again, even when an alternative is being offered. And what you have modeled for us is you saw a way to end suffering, you made a commitment to that way to end suffering, and you've stuck with that commitment. So in the last, I don't know how many years we've been doing this, But there have certainly, I'm sure, been other things, probably with great regularity, that you could have been doing at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. Right? Because the world is full of those things, right? And time and time and time again, you chose not to go with something that would cause you not to keep your commitment to yourself and to your practice. And that's what's required of us. And the place that I get to often, and this is where, you know, I can sound like a hard nose to people. I'm sorry, I really don't mean it that way. but when we are choosing something other than ending suffering, we can at least have the decency to stop complaining about our suffering. You know?
Yeah.
Because we have a way to end it, but we have to choose it, and we have to choose it moment by moment by moment by moment. So anyway, thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for this. Thank you for all of it. Thank you for all these years. May we have many more and like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good.
No reason not to that I can see right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Good. I bet you have an announcement.
And I do.
What are we doing?
The Your Practice Retreat from May 2nd through 9th at the Zen Monastery Peace Center offers individualized practice support, working and sitting meditation, and recording and listening practice.
All good things.
Yes. So don't miss the opportunity to deepen your practice in a beautiful setting, far from daily pressures.
Mm-hmm.
And for a deeper look at the importance of training in spiritual practice, as well as guidance with Sherry, sign up for In This Way, I Do Most Deeply Vow to Train Myself. And that's July 6th through 10th in Menlo Park.
And I think there are two spots available, two spots left in that retreat the last time I heard. So if somebody's thinking about doing it, now would be a good time to hop on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And don't let the voices talk you out of discovering that there is nothing wrong with you. The foundational There is Nothing Wrong with You retreat is being held from July 24th through 31st in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful place where we are flying on Monday. Is that true? Yeah, I think so, on Monday to do the first In This Way retreat. I'm pretty excited because I heard a rumor that the dogwoods are holding. Now, I don't know. They could have just said that because they know the two things that I live for when I head east, dogwoods, cardinals. So they might have just been trying to make me feel better, but I'm excited to go see.
Great, great.
Mm-hmm.
For these and other practice opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders. You could focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make a show by pressing *6 and then 1. So let's get started.
Here we go.
Here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry and Michael. This is Chris in Seattle.
Oh, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. You must, you got a Tuesday off.
I do have a Tuesday off.
Uh-huh. Very good. Very good. So what's going on?
Well, lots of things are going on. I sort of wanted to explore, on my reflective listening call a couple times ago, or last time, or I'm not even sure when now, just how conditioning uses my Enya Type 9 against me, and I think it pops up in more places than I'm aware. But I've noticed it with, the sort of in the relationship areas. If I was going to sum it up, I mean, I'm not an expert on the Enya Type, but I kind of think of it as go along to get along. as a kind of the type. And do you agree with that? Okay.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And conditioning, I've noticed it will, it uses that against me in that it makes I'm then a pushover and a wimp. And so what the way I really need to be and the way it'll like a relationship like with my brother, I'll need, because I'm unhappy about how things are going with him and me, it'll get me off into a fantasy about where we have some kind of confrontation / argument or whatever, and I win, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
And
I think it's out there in other places too. It's just that, and it always, it wants me to be more confrontational, and that's the way I'm supposed to be. So I'll get stuck in my head about in various different ways of being more confrontational or something like that.
Yeah. So a couple of things. One, I think in May there's an email class coming up on the Enneagram. For anybody who wonders what you're talking about with that Enneatype 9, because it is a really helpful support for awareness practice and understanding that typing system. So a couple of things, yeah. So I would bet that it's the same voice that beats you up for not being more confrontational, the rest of the time is talking you into not being more confrontational.
Let me think. Probably the voice that talks me into being more confrontational is the same one that talks me into not being confrontational.
Yeah. In other words, there's something going on. Maybe something arises in you. You know, there's a kind of a discomfort. You've been doing awareness practice for a while. It might even occur to you that this would be a good time to say something, but you get stopped. Because it's not okay for you to say anything.
It's not okay, and it's like if on a time when I see my brother getting together with the family, and there's this thing that's an issue, when push comes to shove, it's okay. No, now's not the right time.
Precisely, precisely. And of course, what we fall for in relationship with those voices is that they're serious, that they mean it, that there's some truth to this.
Oh yeah.
But actually, it's just this is something you will believe, and therefore be willing to be beaten up over.
Yeah, because it's like it feels like a truth with a capital T. This is not the right time.
Yes, yes, and this with a capital T is not the right way to be. Right.
Yeah,
so,
that too.
Yeah. So both of them are big truths, right? It's never the right time to confront. You're a wimp because you don't confront.
Right. And so when the opportunity is there in this situation, let's say my brother and I are together, that's not the right time to do it. But then when he and I are absent, then that's the time to go into the head and imagine, fantasize essentially about being confrontational. That's funny.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so you see it's a big scam, right?
Yes, yes.
Now, let me ask you this, Chris. Are there things that you really would like to say to your brother or straighten out with your brother or that sort of thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
There are.
So one of the things that you mentioned right at the start of this conversation is you were on a Reflective Listening Buddies call.
Yes.
So you now have the tools to have any conversation that you wish to have with anybody.
Oh. Yes. More?
Well, in other words, the voices want you to be confrontational.
Yes.
But I bet even if you weren't a nine, you don't really actually want to be confrontational. You know, what we want is to truly get along with people from a place of unconditional love, mutual respect, and enjoyment.
Yes.
That's what you want with your brother, right?
Yes, yes. I don't want a confrontation with my brother. I would just like some communication with my brother, and I'd be able to express myself to him, not angrily, but centeredly, if that's a word.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it is now. We just okay, made it one. Yeah. So I'm just suggesting that could be a direction to explore. That you could use those skills that you've learned through reflective listening practice to begin to communicate with your brother. Not with the idea that the first conversation all is going to be healed and you're going to be best friends for life. Okay?
Right.
It would probably be rocky. But you can learn to say something, to have him say something. You reflect it. You listen to him. You hear him. You ask him a question. You say something to him. And you could actually, I don't know, if he's not just a total knothead, you could start out with, I would really like our relationship to be better. And I would love for us to be able to communicate rather than, have distance between us or whatever you guys would say to each other that would communicate that you'd like a closer relationship with your brother. And then if he's open to working on it, that's great. Even if he's not, you have the skills.
Yes, yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you can feel perfectly free to tell those voices, I don't want to have those fantasies because that's not what I want.
That's great. Yes, I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And because it raises the same thing with other relationships in my life and in the same manner. And this is one of the easier ones to, well, it's, yes, it's an easier one to work on than other ones,
yes,
perhaps. But, yeah.
And one that you really care about that's important to you. And with, you guys have gotten to this age, so, you're probably committed on some level to having a relationship for the rest of your lives. And so that's a really good one to work on. But the thing about it is, that those peaceful qualities that a 9 has are wonderful qualities. What you don't want is to use that orientation toward comfort, that inner equilibrium and comfort, to have that used against you. So you want to choose to be peaceful and open and loving and kind and not a doormat. And the way that you can do that is by learning to communicate clearly what's actually going on with you, because it's only karmic conditioning that wants to make it confrontational. You're going to win or he's going to win. You're going to win or she's going to win, right?
Yep.
And then, yeah, and so from center, that's not even an issue. From center, we want everybody to win.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you, Sherry.
You're so welcome. Let me know how it goes.
I will. Thank you.
All right. Good night, Chris.
Okay. Good night, Michael. Good night, Sherry.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Chris. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry and Michael. This is Art in Florida.
Hi there.
Hi.
Did you say Art?
Yes. You remember I called a couple months ago?
Yes, but we don't have the best connection in the world. So,
is that right? Okay,
yeah,
let me try this.
You're a little echoey.
Okay, let's try this. Is that better?
Way better.
Is that better?
Much, much, much better. Yeah, good, good.
Excellent.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. I'm here with my wife. We're in the car. I'm sorry that the connection's not that great. Is it still okay?
It's okay. But let's just see how it goes.
Okay, great. Thanks. Yeah, well, anyway, I related to the first caller, and because I'm a 9 also. So I like the suggestion where, you know, where I can actually propose to improve my relationship. My sister, my older sister is, she's struggling with addiction, and now I'm active in a program to help with that sort of thing, and it's something that I pretty much ignore her unless it's her birthday.
Because it's a difficult relationship, or because of her issues, or
I guess it's just the I don't like seeing her suffer so much.
Yeah.
So anyhow, I don't want to take up too much time since the connection is rough. I really just wanted to check in. It's so much fun to to participate, and I'm just glad I'm here.
Yeah, well, it's good. And one of the things that strikes me when you say that is, I bet this, and I'm going to check it out, okay? Do you think your sister knows that the reason you don't interact with her more is because it's too painful for you to see her suffer that way?
Yeah, it really is.
Do you think she knows that?
No, I don't think she does.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we're all the center of the universe, right? And we all assume that everything is, well, the center of the universe, of course, everything is about us. And if we have any self-hate going lurking around, which most of us do, then whatever is going on some level is our fault. Right?
Right.
And so it's very unlikely that we would assume that somebody doesn't interact with us because they care too much for us.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so it might just be a good place to start.
Yeah, thanks.
It's not,
so much that she doesn't want to interact with me. I think she really craves it, actually.
Yes.
But she,
yes.
You know, the disease has her.
Right, but it would be easy for her to project that you reject her because
right.
of how she's living her life, rather than that you really do care about her and it's very painful.
Yeah.
So at some point, if you're ready for that, that might be a really healing, good, whatever description we want to use, conversation to start with her.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Keep in touch, okay?
I sure will. Thanks. Good night.
All
good night,
right.
Michael.
Thanks. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Michael?
Oh, my apologies, Sherry. I was muted there for a moment.
Oh, okay.
I'm back.
All right.
And thank you, Art. And we have another caller.
Okay.
You could please introduce yourself. You're now live on the air.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Sridevi.
Sridevi, how are you?
Hi. I'm good. How are you?
Great. Good to hear your voice. What's going on?
Well, I called to talk about what I heard on the Good News Update two programs ago, and that you restated so beautifully again today about choosing karma over choosing my actual experience, because I am in the thick of it right now with conditioning. And it's been, yeah, but I will say recording and listening has really kind of gave me the breakthrough a couple of days ago to really see what was happening. But it's you know, the content is around this relationship I'm in with this man, which is this amazing relationship, and it's actually everything I've ever thought I ever wanted and more. But my karmic identity is around me not being good enough and needing to be perfect. And so everything, every time I look at him, the voice is literally saying, you're not good enough. You're never going to be good enough. He's always going to want somebody else, like just nonstop. and I see that voice, and I see what I came to in recording and listening was this thing, actually, because as you mentioned a couple of weeks ago, this is not new to this relationship. It has shown up everywhere in my life. Something you actually said to me, I think, like 7 years ago, I think actually when I first called the show, funnily enough, which was, my primary relationship is with conditioning, and it not at that time, and it wasn't with this person. And now here I am consciously making a choice to have my relationship be with this person, and conditioning is just digging its claws into me, saying
the
no.
The jealous lover, the quintessential jealous lover. Yeah?
Yeah. And
he's not going to have you. You belong to me.
Yes. And I see it so clearly, and what came up in that recording and listening was hearing the mentor say, I'm at this point where I have a choice. What relationship do I want to be in? And I know what my heart wants. I know that everything within me wants to be in a relationship with this man, and a relationship with life. You know, it's not, it's about this person, but not about this person, with life and enjoyment and experience.
Yeah.
But what I'm struggling with is how loud that voice is. And there are moments when it's so overwhelming that I feel, what scares me a little bit is I feel, I don't know what it is, the person who just wants to go, okay, I can't do this. I can't, it's too much. Why not just give up? Just give up.
Yep,
and I know I don't want to do it. But it is.
Nope.
It is.
Okay. I have good news for you.
Okay.
It would not be that loud if it weren't coming to the end of its tether. So what it's counting on is that you're going to quit before it has to.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you had a child, 2-year-old, and that child already knows how to get what it wants through throwing temper tantrums.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is, it starts in, parents can't stand it, they do whatever to get the child to stop. Okay? So it's a good system, right? I mean, who's not going to go along with that, right? But what happens when the parents, in fact, if you ever want to see, if you haven't seen it, there's a YouTube video on this that is absolutely hysterical. Where the parent, the child starts, and the parents just walk out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, with nobody paying any attention, of course the child stops. And as the video goes on, you know, the kid actually comes looking for the parent, sees them, and falls down the floor and starts screaming again. Right. So that's exactly how karmic conditioning does, and it's counting on you quitting because you always have before.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, when it got desperate enough and screamed loud enough, you gave in and went along with it. But you're not doing that anymore. And so it's getting more and more and more desperate, and it has a final point. Now, we're conditioned, of course, to believe that it can go on forever like this, and you're just not going to be able to stand it. But that's not true.
Yeah.
Yeah? So what? Here's my encouragement to you. Okay, you find a time when you're alone, when it's yammering at you, and just say, okay, come on, this is it, hit me with your best shot, do your worst, say it all, come on, get it out, because this is it, because unless you have some compelling reason for me to continue to listen to you, this is it, this is the end of it, okay, just and then watch what happens. Okay? And what that will do for you, because you have the ability to pay attention, what that will do for you is prove to you that it has no power over you. That you, in fact, have power over it, and you're withdrawing it. You're withdrawing everything that you have given it that has enabled it to do to you what it's done to you. You're taking it back. I'm not listening. I'm not believing. I'm not going along with it. No. I choose life. I choose me. I choose this relationship.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's really important. It's important for you, and it's important for everybody to get. We have to get to that showdown. And when we get to the showdown, when it's our choice to go to the showdown, we win. We win in the moment we choose it.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, what was amazing about it is there was the moment, I think it was like 4 days ago, where I thought it was really going to get me, and picking up that recording device was like the best thing.
Saved
your
life.
And then I got back to, saved my life, because I didn't know where the recording was going to go. I was just like, just record. And then I remember the moment where I said, I'm at a choice. Do I want to be in this what relationship? And it was so clear in that moment. And then the last couple of days has been, you know, I'm in the practice intensive right now and sitting on the cushion and doing they feel like small things, but they're not. But doing those things that are what my heart wants to do, you know, which the practice intensive so beautifully is having us do. And and just seeing that and seeing it all fall away, and then I was listening to the radio show from 2 weeks ago and tonight, and it all is coming together, and it's so, so grateful to hear what you just said, because it is. It feels like the showdown. It's exactly what feels like it.
No. You've already done it.
Yeah.
That point that you described, that was it.
Mm.
Yeah, that was the showdown.
Yeah.
It was at you. And you reach for the recorder. It was finished. Mm. All that it's doing now is hoping that you're going to not get that, and that you'll go back to believing it, and that you'll think, oh, well, I let go that once, but here I am back again, and so I guess nothing really. No. That was it. And it doesn't mean that it won't come back and try to get you again. And of course it will, but you know that you don't have to give into it. You know, because of the specific content that you're dealing with, this is something I also am pretty sure you know, but I'm going to say it for everybody who might not know it. One of the ways that it wins in a situation like that is that, so there it is hammering you with, you're never going to be good enough, you're not good enough, you're not good enough, he's never going to choose you, you know, he's going to leave, he's going to whatever it is. And with it hammering at you that way, you become somebody that he wants to leave. Not because of who you are, but because he doesn't get to be in relationship with who you are. He's in relationship with this voice telling you you're never going to be good enough.
Yeah.
And it's true. It's not attractive. It's not appealing.
Yeah.
And for somebody outside of us, there's nothing he can do, right? Because he can't be in relationship with those voices, and he can't reassure you if you're identified with those voices. So after a while, it's true. It works. And then the voices can say, see, he left.
It's that I'm in the conversation, and then I make behaviors based on that conversation, and then this manifests, and that's what happens, and then they get to see I told you so, but they were the ones to begin with. And I 100% see that, which is why it's like I think it's just the gratefulness for the practice of go, I don't want to be in that conversation. I don't want to be in it. I'm not interested in it. And it is very compelling, unfortunately. It is very compelling, but I'm not interested in it. It's just nothing for me there. There's nothing but suffering. And it's like you said earlier, it comes down to that fundamental moment of, am I choosing suffering and am I not choosing suffering? Am I choosing suffering or am I choosing to be here?
Yes. And we see in this kind of situation the addictive quality of ego.
Yeah.
You could probably give up heroin easier than this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, it's the reason that people go on suffering.
Yeah.
But when practice gets to this point and you can see it this clearly and you have the tools to turn it around, then that's where the addiction comes to an end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the freedom possible, and the enjoyment, because when I had that moment of clarity, that moment of presence, it was like, huh, you know, it was just a release.
Yes. Yes.
It was just a release. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Such a joy.
All right. Well, thank
Good.
You so much. Thank you so
Enjoy.
Much.
Enjoy. All right. Thank you.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Sri Devi. That was very inspiring, Sherry. It's wonderful.
Mm. Yeah, it is inspiring because we all know that place of, you know, it just escalates until I can't take it. I'll do anything to make it quit and to hang in there and stay through that and to choose to do practice under those circumstances. That is the moment of freedom. That's the moment in which we get who we are, what's possible for us, and our lives turn a corner from which we never return. Yeah, because you can't unknow that. You can't unknow that level of freedom.
Yeah, it's beautiful, very beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to break now and hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have more callers, Sherry.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Michael, it's Ashwini.
Well, hi.
Hello.
How
are you?
I'm good. I was going to come on at the end of the show, Sherry, but I think a middle of the show interruption would work as well.
All right. What are you going to interrupt us with?
Well, I just wanted to add all the gratitude and thankfulness for our wonderful guide, and in appreciation, remind everyone that No Self-Hate Day is on April 18th.
Right.
The International Day of No Self-Hate.
That's
exactly.
Right. That is what?
I said that is a gift that we can offer the guide on that
yes.
very, very special and important day. So I just wanted to make sure that everyone who's listening knows that that date isn't on the horizon. And we can all show our gratitude for how our lives have been transformed by making sure that we pledge to no day of self-hate.
Aha. Uh-huh. So spend that whole day with not allowing self-hate to interfere at all with our beautiful life.
That's right.
I love
to have
that.
To have the life that we have and to receive it completely and not let ego take it over.
That's beautiful. And it falls on a Saturday, which is a very good day for that sort of thing, isn't it?
Yes, it's an absolutely yeah. wonderful day. It could be a complete practice day that we can dedicate to that single purpose, the International
right.
Day of No Self-Hate.
Yes, now it might not happen quite, so many of us celebrated March 20th, the International Day of Happiness, and which is a holiday that the United Nations declared. And so we might start in this worldwide movement to declare this day, International Day of No Self-Hatred.
Mm-hmm.
So we live it and share it, spread it, then hopefully it'll grow. It goes very nicely with happiness, doesn't it? No self-hate,
it
happiness,
does.
They go together. Yeah.
Yes. Well, to have the life that we were born to have.
That yes.
is our in our consciousness to have. It is the intelligence that animates us. And I think just to piggyback on what Michael was saying, right, that, you know, there's deep gratitude for everyone who shows up and offers practice and keeps their commitment to stewarding this practice. And this would be a great way for us all to say thank you to the person who keeps showing up and stewarding this practice for all of us. So thank you so much for holding our heart, Sherry. And on that very special day, we will make sure that we offer that gift. It will benefit us, of course, but it's in gratitude to you.
All right. Well, thank you. That's very kind. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And thank you. Deep gusho.
Yeah, gusho to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ashwini, and thank you, Sherry.
Wow. All right. Woo!
Yeah.
Saturday. No self-hate, everybody. That's what we're doing. I love it.
And we could probably practice before then also, if we wanted to.
Oh, yeah. I think we should practice up ahead of time so that we make it through the entire day and then, you know, practice after that. Because then a year from now, think how good we'll all be at it.
Yes, yes. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please announce yourself?
Hello, hi, it's Anna from Yorkshire in England.
Well, my goodness.
How
are you?
I'm good. I have run before and not been able to get on, and I thought, oh, no, I'm not going to get on again. I'm really happy.
I got to tell you, that's kind of heartbreaking for me because here you are up at 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever it is, and you can't get on the show. Ouch. Sitting here in our own little comfortable time zones, yeah. But oh my goodness gracious!
Well, I'm glad. It makes me sad. Yeah, it makes me sad for like the whole of the next day. I'm like, oh, I didn't get on. And
yeah,
I'm not
gracious,
really
but here
far.
You are.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here, and just to say, for me, of course, a really big thank you to Michael. You know, for hosting the show because obviously it means a lot to me, and Michael has helped me a few times as well. And that was also echoing a couple of shows. Oh, I can't remember his name, but the chap that usually rings from China, but he's moved back over your way again. He was saying
yes, Peter.
He was saying how much the show and the archives meant to him, and you know that's the same for me. So yes, so very very big thank yous to Michael.
Uh huh. Uh huh. Absolutely. Yeah. How long have you been doing this with us?
I don't know. Ages, a really long time. A really long time. We always base things on how old our children were and things, don't we? But I think Poppy was 12 initially, and then she turned 13.
I think
she's 23 now, so definitely 10 years, maybe
you,
even.
Yeah, you girls were there at the beginning. Yeah,
yeah,
that's what I remember too. That's how old she was.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean, we talk about Living Compassion all the time and the books, like, in our household still and with Poppy. Poppy's, she's still partly at home because she's halfway through her master's and she's doing that at the university here. And so, and your books are always in the house and she's got a boyfriend now. She's had her boyfriend for a long time and sometimes she helps him a little bit, you know, and it's all the things that we've learned. And we just say, oh, Sherry would say. So it's a bit like you're part of the family, really.
Well, I love that.
Yeah,
I love being part of the family. And, she can think of me as Auntie Sherry.
I know, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I think he's lovely because obviously I've not managed to get over, so I've still not met you, but it's still, you know, it's just really is a part of the conversation now. And a recently, a really amazing thing that's happened for us is my husband has started meditating, and he just does it. And he just does it all
myself.
And I just think that is amazing. He's been doing it for a year now. And he just goes off and he does it. And when he's really stressed, he just goes off. And I have never really sort of said, you should be doing this or anything like that, because I know, you know, that's not how you do it.
No.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's really not a good thing.
Not a good idea. And,
but he's just watched what's happened with you and what's happened with Poppy and that sort of thing. And over time, he just realized that's what he wants to do too.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
So he joins me and everything. So yeah, but just really quickly, I just wanted to say I'm really well. And from the last email class, you said to do making a change for good. I think you just sort of said that as or somebody put that in the final email. You know, when this email class finishes, you know, everybody go and do making a change for good. So I did that, and I did that based on. One of the things that came up in the email class, which was about, and you'd responded to it, and it was about how I'd seen that when I'm at work, that's when that's when I'm my least authentic self. And so my behaviour change was taking my authentic self to work, and I'm sort of most authentic when I'm at home. And so I decided to do that, and I did that for the first month, and now I'm doing it for the second month, and I'm really enjoying it, having a really good time.
Good. You're enjoying work more.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I'm enjoying the making a change. It's just such fun, and I'm seeing so much. And so, like, when I'm going to work now, and I'm sneaking in, because I am... I'm talking about, like, my main job is 4 days a week, and I support students with learning disabilities in class. So it's not like being the teacher; it's being the support worker for the student with a disability. But I'm sneaking a little notebook in, you know, for when there are moments when I can sort of sit back, and I've written down what the activity was for the day in my little notebook, and so I'm managing to sort of do it a little bit at work, and that's bringing it. Sort of into work, and it's making work about that as well, so it's making it even more about practice. It's great.
I love it. That is wonderful.
That is
all such good news, isn't it?
Yes.
How the family is changing and growing, of course, Poppy, you know, she's grown up, and but you getting through your education process, and then the work, the career, and how that's going, and that it's all based in practice.
Absolutely. It's all good. It's really good. So, yeah.
So
lovely to talk to you. And as I say, we think of you and everybody, and Michael and everybody, every day.
Thank
you.
Great.
Thank you, everybody.
We're there with you. We're there with you. I love it. All right. Thank you. Good night.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. Night-night. Bye-bye, Michael. Night-night.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. That was so inspiring, Sherry. That's just wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it really is. Yeah, we've known that family for a long time.
Yes.
Yeah.
About since Open Air was started. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. And Dad, you know, Dad was not always as excited and enthusiastic as Mom was. And there's Dad meditating. I just love it. Wonderful.
Yeah, wonderful.
We got to get her over here to a retreat. I'm gonna make that a priority.
Great. She might still be listening.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll do that. All right.
Great. And I think we have time for at least one more caller here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry, this is Beth from Denver.
Well, hello.
Hello.
My goodness. My goodness. How are you and how are all of your friends?
Everybody is great. Great.
Good.
Great. I don't even know where to start. For some reason, I just had this feeling I would get on tonight. I've tried for a couple of times, and just tonight I was very attentive. I was just, yes, this is going to be
uh-huh. it. So who knows how all of that works, but it
did exactly,
work.
Exactly. I don't know. Something came across. So I wanted to just share a couple of observations that I've had. As you know, my dog has been diagnosed with cancer, and it's amazing how with practice, the shift that's happened with that, where it feels so seamless in my life now that, and now this is what my life is. You know, making her food by hand, giving all the supplements, making sure I'm doing mind-body connection with her in a sense of visualization and thanking her every day for just being here with me.
Mm-hmm.
And how easy that's been because of the practice that I've cultivated with studying with you in the monastery. And just, I mean, it's just, it's absolutely amazing.
This is a funny way to talk about it, but so life is a retreat, and this is the current focus of practice, right?
Exactly.
When you're in the at the monastery, so it's this time and we sit, and now it's this time and we cook, and now it's this time and we do chores, and now it's this time and we, you know, like that. And so we take that into all of our lives, and so now it's time to cook, and now it's time to meditate, and now it's time to, and you're doing that now with, instead of the people at the monastery, your canine companion.
Exactly. And it was when I realized I wasn't going to be able to make it to the monastery for April. And I said, well, this is going to be my monastery. This, you know, making my house, my home, kind of into that monastery experience of, and this is exactly like you said, and this is what I do now, and this is what I do now, and this is what I do now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. And what an amazing little sangha you've got there. And in the way that Jen and Michael started out talking on Good News Update, that the relationship is so mutually beneficial.
Yeah.
The support, you know, so people who don't think in these terms would say, well, isn't that wonderful that you're devoting yourself to caring for her at this time? But that's not the experience at all.
No.
Right? I mean, I project this, but that you hope she's getting as much out of it as you are.
Well, absolutely. And what she shows me every day, getting up, eating her food, showing excitement, gaining strength every day, and, you know, staying in the moment. I mean, really, for her, she's not going, oh, gosh, I have cancer, and I may, you know, my longevity is looking really bad right now. She has none of that, and it really allows me to be in that space with her of not going to conditioning. I mean, I had the first couple weeks were rough. I mean, no doubt about it. But after I made the decision last weekend, or no, 2 weekends ago, it was really with this idea of I'm not looking back. You know, I'm not looking back. I'm going this route with her treatment, and we're going to see what happens. And it kind of became, how you've offered before, like an exciting experience. And does that sound messed up to conditioning that my dog having cancer could be an exciting experience or exciting experience?
Well, and for people who don't know, what you decided to do, so what they offered her is maybe 12 months If she has chemotherapy and
amputation.
All of that, yeah, and amputating one of her legs,
right.
Maybe it's 12 months. And it's such a I don't know if it's the rest of, I doubt it's the rest of the world, but certainly such an American approach. So she has cancer, so we're going to take off her leg and give her chemotherapy, and maybe she'll live 12 months. And your decision was actually no, because all that's going to do is throw her into a world of misery for whatever period of time she has left.
Right.
You know, if they said, you do this and probably she'll live another 5 years, then we might say, well, gosh, you know, maybe that would be worth it to go through. But
exactly.
Yeah, there's just no, you know, there's no good news about this except being with her and providing the most loving environment for her for as long as she has, which is what we're trying to do with all of us.
Yes.
Right? Right?
Yes.
That's what we're trying to do for ourselves as well.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. Well, in a way, she's become kind of this manifestation of my heart. It's like I care for her the way that what you would do for the love of others, what you would do for the love of someone else, you would do for yourself. Is that making sense?
Yeah.
And in working with her and really caring for her, all of the things that my heart has been longing for is being fulfilled through that. It's like that idea that my actions aren't going to be rewarded by her living and dying. My actions are rewarded every moment I'm doing that action.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You understand completely that the process is the outcome.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And this is
not leading us anywhere except here. Now.
Right.
This is all we got. And it's so clear in these circumstances, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just so obvious.
Yes, death, the prospect of death makes it very clear what life is and is not.
Yes, yes, yeah. And again, these creatures are such great role models for us, because if she doesn't feel well, she doesn't feel well.
Right.
And it's, she's perfectly happy to just lie there and not feel well.
Right.
But when in the next moment she feels well, then she wants to participate as much as she can participate.
Exactly.
Again, this is what we're trying to learn.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I would like to offer a little side note, because some people had mentioned it on the show tonight about relationship, and you know that's my other big karma piece.
Yes.
I was having my reflective listening call the other night, and I was talking about it, and I said, you know, I just realized something. Conditioning is saying that this is a problem, this relationship is a problem. If I don't listen to conditioning, then it's not a problem.
Yes. Oh, that's brilliant, isn't it?
And I just dropped.
Isn't that brilliant?
It was like it all dropped away.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, you. I thought you were finished. No, you. I'll remember.
It was this throwing open a window of how conditioning wants to categorize experience into something. It's a problem, it's not a problem. You're happy, you're not happy. It was all of a sudden like I finally got the clearing of, okay, I'm in this relationship, but I'm not going to listen to conditioning anymore telling me it's a problem.
That's right. And the parallel, right, is the puppy who does not live in a conversation of, oh, no, I have cancer, I'm going to die.
Right.
So not living in that conversation, there's just whatever is going on now. Not living in conversation about the relationship, there's just what's going on now. And if we are committed to unconditional love, then what's going on now is unconditional love.
Exactly. And what it's done is it's kind of thrown conditioning into this total tailspin of now saying, well, because you don't have the drama anymore, the constant conversation of What is it? Now it's bored.
Good. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fabulous. Because now you're freed up to practice what's there when you're not being entertained by conditioning's drama. And you're free to decide what else you might like to turn your attention to.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's a big opening for me to also see how adequate I am to my life in going forward with the project that I know you know I'm working on and not be sidetracked by these other things and having conditioning suck me into those saying, no, you really have to attend to all of this. It's like, no, my life includes all of this now. And it's made my life so expansive. I can't even tell you.
Expansive and really simple.
Yes.
I don't have any problems. I have my life. And so that frees me up simply to live my life.
Yeah.
To be present for my life instead of not present in a conversation about what's wrong.
Well, exactly, because that conversation is what takes all the time and energy away from just living my life.
Yeah.
So I will echo Ashwini, deep gratitude to you and Michael and the entire Sangha, because I have felt very connected to Sangha through all of this, and it's been so wonderful to have that.
Good. I'm so glad. Take good care of yourself. I know you will, but I'm going to say it anyway. Okay?
Well,
you gals take good care of each other.
Yes, I appreciate the support and encouragement, as always.
All right. Good night.
Good night. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Sherry.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Thanks for joining us, Beth. Well, we are very blessed people, Sherry.
We are, aren't we? My goodness gracious. May we never forget it for a moment. May we say thank you with every breath.
Yes, it's certainly obvious tonight to me.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah.
So thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.